I am Jerry, I'm an alcoholic.
Yeah,
I found out early that as far as where I was at, there's only two kinds of alcoholics. That's the drunk ones and sober ones. And it's indeed an honor to be asked to share here with you for whatever the time may be. I've talked at a lot of different conferences over the years. I got sober January 28, 1974, and it's been quite a journey here for me. And that's what. And Marlene was right. I dedicated my life to AA. I didn't believe it would work. It was just another deal, you know. And I had drank for, not even many years, maybe 14, 15 years. But where it had taken me and the different things that came up in sobriety, I used to think it was all about my drinking. And I found out a lot of my things were all about my living. You know, certainly I never overlooked the way I drank and what I did and the abuse I did to people and the abuse that people did to me growing up. You know, my family, I'm from Detroit, Michigan. Hi, Kathy. People talk about their dysfunctional families. The best way to describe my area, my family, except for my mother, is I'm from a dysfunctional city. You were the weird one if you went to church or if you had coffee or if you did this and all that. You know, I was raised in the 40s, and my dad, having this disease I had, all I knew about it was that this poor guy was a drunk. And we lived in an attic, and housing was so bad in Detroit then, during the war and what have you. And so, just to touch on that a little bit, my dad put so much stress on me and so much everything on me that I had a stroke when I was 7 years old. And I had shock treatments, and back in those days, the shock treatments were a little like needles with energy in them. I don't know how much voltage, but they hit you with this. And at the same time, I got that because it has a lot to do with coming into AA and the different things we get to work on and how powerful the steps are. You know, I'm a step person, and when I came in, you know, if you weren't a step person, you weren't going to be around that group very long. You know, I love it when people quote, well, he's a big book thumper. Well, where I was, you didn't even make fun of that. You better be into that big book, and you better be thumping it without being nicknamed that. But so what happened with me at seven, to help my self-esteem, living in this attic and what have you, I had the stroke, and then I got ringworm. And back in the 40s, let me tell you how they treated ringworm. They shave your head, they take like iodine, and put it for disinfectant all over your head, and then they take part of my mom's top of her stocking and make four knots in it and pull it over your head. And I would go to school and I'd sit with dysfunctional people, and this is kind of the way it was for me for a long time. And that's right. That's all right to laugh because everybody laughed at me. Everybody made fun of me. But I had one good eye. What happened is I love basketball, and I became a good basketball player. And one day, about 2.5 years later, my mom took me there, and my brother helped pay for everything. My brother Johnny, who's no longer with us, but he, this guy loads up this machine one day and hits me, and I like went through the chair. The nerves had came back. So that was like my mom would say another. My mom would always program me with spiritual life, the good life. She says, and you will come back. You will be like other kids. Well, what happened? Not knowing I'm an alcoholic at eight, everybody that was mean to me, brother, I was gonna get back. You know, by the time I was 10, I got even with everybody, brother. Everybody, you know. And so I know a guy who came into the program, he said, I don't have many resentments, I got even quick. You know, I was kind of amongst those people. And my dad not being around as much as he could because of his drinking, I was actually raised in the streets of Detroit. And I tell you what, I wasn't a tough guy, but you had to get to where you protected yourself. So I picked up different things. You know, I could do things to harm people, and then I turned 10. You know, so I knew men I didn't have much use for, boys or whatever, because I seen how my dad abused my mother. And I didn't like that. My mom was about 4 foot high. She was humpback. And I'm the youngest in the family. And so my mother had me when she was 45 years old. And I found out through my brothers and sisters over the year, prying it out of them, my dad never wanted any more kids, the youngest to me. is my sister Eileen and my brother, and Eileen just turned 80, and my brother's 81, and I'm 63. So I come in with this nice little woman that I was the love of her life, and she was definitely the love of my life, you know. And this is another defect that I was going to have to work on, still do, is being nice to women in the program. Because I, for one thing, being here as long as I have, for me now, I'm only speaking for me. So if you have a thing with me, if I heart, if I say something that maybe offends you, I'm just remember this is my story, you know. And if it does harm you, you might want to read step 10 and 12 by 12, and that'll take care of that, you know. Yeah, because I'm not your problem. That's been all my problem all my life. Thinking other people and places and things were my problem, yeah. So as I grew, I used to wonder how I could just get rid of Dad. You know, that's where I was. Then I turned 11, you know. Well, poor guy drank so much that, not knowing he had alcoholism, I was 16, and I was on a basketball scholarship. I know I was picked because all this time I played ball. Nobody wanted nothing to do with me, so I played basketball. I practice, you know. You'd catch me down at the church, and they'd lock up the basketballs. And if I set up so many chairs, I tell you what I would do. They had these old footballs. And I could take a football, go in the corner by the moonlight in this gym, and shoot basketball. And boom, boom. So I went on to become a pretty good basketball player. My dad never, you know, being so sick, never saw me play one game. My mom never missed a game, you know. And my mom would get in my dad's face, and my dad would put her aside. And sometimes I didn't feel like eating supper. This is just briefly what I had to go through. And the man was sick, and I understand that today, thanks to this program. If I couldn't eat supper some nights, it was like the next night I'd show up. He'd say, well, what are you doing at the table? I said, well, my mom said, what do you mean? Well, he's here. He's going to have supper. Well, no, he couldn't eat. You know, he didn't eat supper last night. He don't need to eat tonight. And in this attic, I slept on a rollaway bed by the table. So what my mom would do, once my dad passed out, she would bring me food out, which she'd hide, and I would eat like at 2 o'clock in the morning. No, this is just briefly of what went on for periodically a long time. And then the drinking finally got to him. He had a heart attack. Then he started drinking 10 high with nitroglycerin pills. And one day I saw him, and I said, I was 16. I'll never forget it. I said, how you doing, Dad? And he said, you know, I'm doing just fine. He turned to me, I'm doing just fine. And I said, oh, that's great. And because I never knew who was coming at me. You never knew who I never knew who I had. Never, you know. And he fell against me, and I caught him. And by the time I laid him in the floor, he was dead. And now, the ironic thing of that is, for I'm so blessed with AA, is that was January 28, 1954. And I got here January 28, 1974. So we were so poor, I went to live with my sister in Columbus, Georgia. Now, there's a culture shock. Oh, brother, let me tell you what. Them people are living in way in the past, you know. And I go like, wow. I mean, my high school in Detroit, I was an inner city kid. My high school had like 3,000 kids in it. You know, most of the high schools inner city. The Temptations went to Northwestern High School. I was raised in a predominantly black area. But it was all right with me because I learned how to dance and play basketball at a very young age. You know? And all these great people I seen, they were like my heroes. I was 4 years older than those people. And they all made good. They all were like, we were like learning. We never called it the ghetto or poor or, you know, I never had any problems till, you know, when I was poor is when I got stuff. Well, I got a new Cadillac, yeah, but look at that new Mercedes. You know, I mean, that's where we go, right? So, you know, anyhow, the joy was that I had to keep, I met the love of my life, and I didn't drink. And she liked that. And we graduated from high school. And I was death on drinking because of my dad. You know. But I had this loving mother. One of the things I love about my mother, she could find good in everything. Everything. You know, we're living in this attic one day, and I said, you know, Mom, I don't know about this attic deal. And she says, Jerry, she just pulled me aside and set me down. She said, Jerry, do you know how lucky you are? I go, no, Mom. And this is some of the things she would, this kind of gives you an idea of my mom. She'd say, you know, when it snows, before it hits the ground, we're the first people that see it. And the people on the lower levels and walking around, they have to wait till it actually comes all the way down on the ground. And we get to see it up here. I go, wow, I never thought about that, you know. And she would bring these things to me, you know. And so I knew anger wasn't good, but being raised, it was like around people and being battered here and there. And I remember one time I just couldn't take any more. My dad was, he was wide open. He says, hit me. Boy, I held off and I hit him right in the Adam's apple, almost knocked him out. And he was going to make me pay. He made me pay off and on. But he was sick. You know, if you're holding on to resentments with people like that are sick, just a suggestion. Hopefully you'll get into forgiveness for them. You forgive them because that's your channel to God. Don't let them mess with your sobriety, you know. And so I went on down to Columbus, Georgia. This was met the love of my life because of my stroke and the way I played basketball. I never had many dates. Not at all, you know. And that was all right for me, you know. My mom was my date. My mom was it for me. And so I meet this girl, and we graduate from high school together. And things happen. She gets pregnant, and I go in the Air Force. And now I'm in the service. And so she comes to live with me in Fort Worth. And I went to Goose Bay, Labrador. I came back home on a leave. I got there, the Labrador. I've never been out of the States ever in my life. I got there, and all this snow and everything, and that was like on my birthday, April. And they said, well, everything we do here, we know you play basketball, and I play basketball in the service. You know, I'm not bragging. It's just that was my love, was basketball, and my mom. That's where it went. Now I have this woman with, actually, that time I had two kids, and they were very small. And so, and I never drank. Well, I started drinking up there. A shot of CC was like, probably be like that. It was like 20 cents. Cigarettes were $1.80 a carton. And they informed me that everything, you know, everybody up here smokes and drinks. There's nothing to do in Goose Bay. They were right about that. There's nothing up there. I was in a support group for the Strategic Air Command. Duh. Sack train killers, boy, that was something, you know. But we wore that one out. You know, with our egos, man, we got into that with the little eagle and the hands and all the badge and all. Oh, brother, you know. So I see how I bit into everything that ego drove me, you know, including basketball. And so I come home. I played on the 8th Air Force best basketball and softball team, and I got to go by and visit my wife while I was on leave, and we already had two small kids. And I got her pregnant. And so I go back. By the time I come home from Goose Bay, I have two small kids and one on the way, you know. And when I got home from Goose Bay, she didn't know I drank, and I told her, boy, how great what I found. Just like Jack Lemmon in the movie Wine and Roses, I brought her into the disease. And it was strictly disease. It looked like fun, but it was a makeup. It was like, one thing I learned about drinking, maybe it made us high and drugs or whatever, but it stopped feeling. It stopped all my feelings is what it basically did. And I learned that when I got here. So, you know what? She gets pregnant, and we have one more child. She says, you know, Jerry, this drinking isn't getting it. I can compete with a woman, but I can't compete with this drinking. And I go like, well, you know what? She ain't going to do nothing. I said, you know, I'm in service and good money is fairly decent and free hospital and all that. Well, my mom died, and that devastated me. My mom died, and we buried her December 25th, Christmas Day, 1962. So I flew out to Detroit to bury my mom, the love of my life. And I came back home on the 26th of December. My family was gone because of my drinking. And I had just started drinking. And that was openers. You know, it's not funny, but it was openers for me. I go like, well, they'll be back. You know, well, I've never seen them to this day. Ever. Period. That's the price. If you think maybe your price isn't out there, I never would have. I told you when I went to my mom's funeral, I would have told you my wife, oh, even though she left, I know she'll be back. No way. No way. And so I went on drinking for you know, until I drank my way out of the Air Force, you know, out of a basketball career. And my last 5 years basically were in an alley, you know. And that was okay with me because, you know, I was punishing myself. I loved drinking, and it was free. The price I was paying was checking out a garbage can here and there, you know. And I was okay. You could have sent this whole room and said, man, sobriety is great. And I wasn't ready. I just wasn't ready. And so I got run out of Houston. for being a drunk nuisance. I used to wonder why my brother had to handcuff me and what my rap sheet was like. Well, that's very humiliating. It wasn't like dealing heroin or coke or, you know, bootlegging. It says right there, drunk nuisance. Found drunk walking down Westheimer. Found drunk in park. Other parks. You know, it would go on and on with just this. Nothing glamorous. I was just a nuisance, you know. And so they got, my brother got me a ticket and sent me to Detroit because he couldn't take it any longer. My sister in Detroit couldn't handle it, you know. And it was cold there and what have you. So she sent me to California. I have a sister out there. And she warned her, hey, Jerry's coming. You know, be careful. But I wore out being the baby of the family. I wore that one till it wouldn't last anymore. Well, my sister in California, she's very gullible, very loving. To this day, this is the most loving. Next to my mom, this woman is just full of love. That's the best way to describe her. And I how you remember things. When my dad died, my sister's oldest son now, he was just born, and he had a heart problem, and she couldn't come to the funeral. So here was my opener with Eileen. Eileen told me, she says, well, everybody in the family, I guess you know, has called me. And we got to watch out for you and this and that. I said, oh, well, they didn't tell you the whole story, did they? And I was right dead in her eyes. She says, boy, I said, well, as long as we're going to be honest about everything, did they tell you about how they talked about you when you didn't come? This is years ago now. This is going to be like 20 years when you didn't come to Dad's funeral because you're too good because you live in California in the hills and all that. And I looked at her eye. You know how good we're at that? Did we get a tear yet? No. Because it's a family illness, and they'll buy. I mean, some of my family would buy till they couldn't buy it any longer. They'll buy your stuff. You'll sell it till they drop, till you wear them in the ground, right? And I even got a little tear. She said, well, I didn't know that. I said, oh, I got her. You know, money, you know, and drinks. So God bless her, you know. She let me stay with her, and then when I knew my time was getting short and going back to the alleys, I go like, well, you know, so I did the nicest thing that anybody could do to somebody in your family that helps you, right? I burglarized her. So I would burglarize her off and on and get stuff, you know. This woman, this is how I treated my family. So anyhow, she's a hairdresser. One of her friends is chief of police. She asked his wife what she should do with me. She wanted to commit me to an institution. And the woman said, if you put him in an institution, you're going to lose him anyhow because they fill him full of Thorazine. That's how they control people. And that's how far I had gone. And this woman loved me, I'll tell you, loved me. And so she told me, he says, let's do this. In California, they call it 86 you. You know, and if you're not allowed back in the bar, they say you're not allowed back in, you're 86th. And they'll call around town. Yeah, we 86th him. Okay. So anyhow, I got 86. If you've ever been to California, go across the Golden Gate Bridge, you're in Marin County. They had me 86 from Marin County. And I believe this guy. He was pretty tough. So they dropped me off over in the city. Well, it's cold, and the holidays have passed, and it's mid-January, and I panhandle. I was a good panhandler. Couldn't use my veins too much because I donated so much. In California, you don't sell your blood. You sell your plasma. And you can give it 3 times a week. What they do is take your blood out of you. It takes about an hour and a half process for $5. It goes down the chute. They take the plasma out of the blood and bring the blood back and put it in you, and you get $5. Well, man, that's like, well, I finally used my veins up where I couldn't do that, you know. And I became a good panhandler. One day, it was the power I know now moving me. I woke up in this alley, and I used to go around the alley with a peach can and just pour whatever I saw into this peach can and then drink it. You know, glass with wine in it or whatever, just drink it, you know. Didn't matter, I just wanted to drink. You know, basically that's all I ever wanted to do is just drink. I mean, if you have a nice club and you're drunk, fine. If you're in the alley drunk, fine. But what we want to do is drink, you know. And so I got up, I panhandled, and for some reason I went to the bus depot. I said, I want a ticket out of here. They said, well, that's not going to take you very far. And they looked at me. I was obese, I found out. And I weighed over 300-some pounds. I said, well, you know what? Here's a little ticket. When we can tell you to get off this bus, you get off. So I get off the bus. Now, I didn't argue with nobody. I was beat. But I was sober. Now, I'm walking down the street in this town. And I see a guy handing out, you know, getting ready. I thought it was a handout joint. and he's putting out cookies. So I went in behind him, and I grabbed a handful of cookies. And I was heading for the door. He says, "Hey, wait a minute. Something's going to happen here. I think you might like it." I looked at him, little short guy. I said, "Nothing going to happen here, and I don't know about anything that I would ever like." I was just full of anger. And he says, "Well, I'll tell you what." I said, "What?" "Now, I have nothing, right?" "What?" "You ever thought I had a new car outside?" "What?" "If you stay here, I'll give you this whole box of cookies." "Oh, boy, do we have this fool." Yeah. I said, "All right, man." I knew they were fresh because I saw it, you know, how the box was open. You learn a lot about food eating out of garbage cans. You learn about what's fresh, what ain't. Yeah, you know, most of the fresh stuff is all the way to the bottom because the stuff on top of it, if you ever get out of a garbage can and think you need to go back out and try it one more time, you will survive out there. It's kind of miserable, but anyhow, it's way down in the bottom of the garbage can. And it's pretty fresh. We're very wasteful people, you know. But anyhow, and get near a Wendy's or a McDonald's because they throw a lot of shit away there. So I sat over there in that chair, and he said, "Something's going to happen here," and he was right. My whole life changed that day. That was January 28, 1974, and I've never been back out since. Thanks to a man that on my 11th day came to this old wino house that I was vacuuming, and he says, "Where's this guy, Jerry?" He wandered into our meeting. He said, and they had this like a handout place where you could stay, 3 hours in a cot. And, "Oh, he's right there." And he, and this is what I didn't know. I wandered into a meeting. It was all people from the penitentiary. You know, God was below me, but, you know, I wanted in there. You know. And so this guy says, "Well, yeah, he's just about done." So this guy, he's buffed out. He got tattoos, just an old dirty shirt. You know. "Jerry, yeah, come here. Have you done the steps?" I looked at him. "Now, you know, I've never been to AA." I said, "No, I do the carpet." And he even smiled. And I didn't, you know, this guy was really a hard-nosed convict. And I said, he says, "No. In recovery, there is 12 steps. You know, in that room that you walked into, you see the stuff on the wall? The only thing I really saw on the wall was there was a big sign that said, 'If you want to stay sober, when do you expect to start?'" I thought that was kind of neat, you know. So he says, "Come on with me." And that afternoon, well, it started around 10. By 3 o'clock, this man took his time out of his life. And I remember that to this day, to take me through the steps, to at least show me how it's done. Not... And I'm just speaking for me, not wait to see if I'm ready to do a fourth, or wait to see if I'm ready, or it's not good enough, or that. Sponsorship in those days, were all they were people that took you through the steps. They weren't guardian angels. They weren't that. As a matter of fact, the quicker they got rid of you, the better off they liked it. Boom. You know. And so he says, "Here's what you do. The fourth step." People have asked me about that. The fourth step is, you know, an inventory. An inventory is what you have right now, right? That's the way I looked at it. The way the guy explained it to me. So I did an inventory the best I could. I read it to him best I could. 6 and 7, he read to me. "When you go home, since this is your home," I read it to you because I couldn't read well. "You know, you overlook what you've done. You did the best you could." Right. 8 and 9 are wherever there's amends to be made, wherever possible. 9 is whenever made direct amends. Whenever possible. 10 is continue to take a daily inventory and to help us stay free for this God that works through us. Meditation is helps us contact with this God that brought this loving God brought us people to this program. That cookie didn't bring you here. God brought you here. And 12 is helping others and having a good time. It's the joy of this program. And he flipped over the 12 by 12. He says, "See here, the joy of living is the theme of AA's 12 step, and action's the key words. Right there in the book. Everything he did, we didn't do it his way, we didn't do it my way, or everybody's ideas. We did it the AA way. And that's why I came into this program. You know, that's why I got full of joy. You know, I told this roommate I had, I said, "Hey, his name is Sam. Has Sam got you yet?" "No." "We don't have to take a drink again one day at a time the rest of our life. Well, he's coming down with that stuff with you too." And so here comes, and sure enough, now there's four of us that Sam got a hold of. One died about a year or two ago. The other three of us are celebrating over 26 years. In January, we'll celebrate, you know. So, you're all, you know what, and if you're new out there, you're going to hear all kinds of things from people. Just go to the book. A man that went through the steps with me again, because I love this program. I swear, there is nothing that could stop me from drinking. You left me at my mom's, when I was at my mom's funeral. You know, I had that experience. Burying my mom, you leave me with my four kids. I never see them again. I'm not proud of this. So how is all these steps, I'm sober, because I've been sober, I didn't drink until I was 24 years old. I know what it was like not to drink, and drinking did it all for me. God, I loved it, you know, to the end. And now I love AA, because I found a way. And I mean, when I had 30 days, I owned AA. I owned this baby. Yeah, I was there. Anybody that's ever know me that was here or whatever, you know, from my past, I'll tell you, I just lit up like a star or something, because there was no way. The man also told me, if you can take a drink and do these steps, I'll buy you all you can drink, and I don't have much money, but I'll buy you your first one anytime you want it. And I figured, well, I got this dude, man. I got him. You know, he don't even know what he's talking about, because nothing could stop me. Well, it has stopped me now for over 26 years, because I was willing to look at me, and it takes time. You know, I'll tell you what I was. I was a 350-pound raging Archie Bunker. That's what I was. And to be standing here in front of this beautiful group of people is the miracle. My people are going like, I can't even believe this myself. You know? And that's why I've always felt welcome wherever I go. I spoke at Cocaine Anonymous. I never used any coke. But, you know, they want to hear about recovery. You know, they weren't worried about a coke story, you know. Most of the people I've talked to like to hear about, how do you stay sober from your first meeting? What did you do? I tell you, it was all about God and helping others. Very simple. Help others, do meditation, help others, do meditation. I remember I used to ask Chuck C. When he was in my down in Laguna, I said, well, Chuck, you know, I got this problem. I tell you what he would say. You go out and take care of God's business, and he'll take care of your business. And before he died, he wrote a book, A New Pair of Glasses, because he believed that AA was like putting on a new pair of glasses. The most beautiful man I've ever met to walk this program was Chuck C. You know, the greatest miracle that you ever see in this program is the person you see in the mirror every day. That's what I learned from Chuck. You know, that's the one. You know that story. We're telling my story. I'm like, hey, if stories impress you, you think yours isn't bad enough, don't go out there and use or drink. Make up one. We don't care. I got shot here. I got five heart transplants. Wow. You know, just don't drink. Okay. If some stories impress you, hey, you know, shoot, you know. And then, you know, then life hit with me. You know, I knew things were going to come up. And the people that were with me, I knew. And to this day, my excitement in the program is sobriety. And then the day starts, baby. last night I was watching Prince in Purple Rain, and I love that movie. Boy, I tell you, I used to get out there and, you know, and get with it, you know. And I just couldn't, you know, I couldn't, you know, not get out of my chair last night and not dance to that movie. I mean, it was just, matter of fact, I was going to call my friend here. And I said, no, it's 11 o'clock. She wouldn't appreciate that. But I get excited about life, you know. And so things would come up. The inventory about my dad took, you know, layers and layers. It took 9 years. I finally went back to Detroit. I went out to his grave and gave him my 9-year chip. I know it was all ceremony kind of thing, but for me to give away a 9-year chip, for me, to give away any of my chips is like, you know, like, it's a blessing, you know. And they do that out there. You know, if somebody out there gives you if you've got 12 years and they give you your 13 or their 12 years, that's an honor. That means that they're kind of like a blessing, you know. And it's not the chip that keeps you sober. It's the guy upstairs, you know. However we understanding, this guy told me, here's the way it is, brother. When we talk about God, that means you finish the third step. You don't talk, you don't call it the light bulb, or you don't call it anything of the religious thing. In here, we're all alcoholics. And in here, step three says, I turn my life and will over to the care of God. And this is the group I'm in with now. So you don't call it her or it. Or the light bulb, AA says you call it God. Okay, and that's the way I am. Anytime you see me get a little fussy at a meeting, if somebody's getting our program out of context, and then they'll say, well, it don't matter. Well, it does matter, because I was also taught you never knew who's the newcomer. You know, so you start throwing around religious sayings, they may say, well, another deal, and head out the door. But I've also learned that, you know, if they're not ready, they're not ready. And if they are, there's nothing you can say that won't keep them from staying here. You know? Nothing kept me from staying here. I didn't want this thing. You know, and then life came up, my four kids. You know, that was an inventory. When I made my amends, another man had raised them. And they said, hey, here's what we want. This man took care of your kids. This is my wife telling me this, my ex-wife. She says, and you've been gone so long, that's their father. You were the physical father, he was the real father. And I had to own that one. And that was true. There's more than being a father than just having a baby with a woman. You know, and that was a hard one to choke down. Because I'd go to meetings and people are coming in, oh, I got my kids back. Oh, I got my job at Honeywell. Oh, I got me a new car. And nobody'd hire me. You know? Yeah, well, here's my resume. Well, what happened? Yeah, I got tired of writing down bankrupt, you know. Company I worked for went bankrupt, you know. I had 5 years in the alley, and there wasn't no employment going on, and so, you know. I almost had a job at Wendy's, and I was in this old wino home, and a guy had slipped and picked up the phone, and they said, Wendy's? Who? And he was drunk, and they could tell it, and by the time I got to the phone, they said, they never do this. We called to let you know that we weren't going to hire today. You know, I go, okay. And that man never going to, there comes a resentment, you know. And like I said, I hated everybody, but I love sobriety. I didn't trust you because they didn't trust me. You know, watch them, watch that, watch her. Yeah, watch that. You know, why didn't you trust me? It wasn't nothing about you. You know, and every time I talk about you, I'm talking about me. This program has nothing to do with other people. Absolutely nothing. Nothing. So that's on step 10 in the 12x12. Whenever I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with us. Oh, okay. Because I wanted, and it took me time to believe that. Because I knew a woman that was in this room from the penitentiary, and I fell in love with her. I just wanted to be with her. And the power sent me a job, you know. Selling things, and I was able to build that into a pretty nice company. And then I married her. She learned one thing in the penitentiary. She had 4 years and went back out. I went to the joint. I met her. She had six or seven kids. And we ended up getting married. I had about 2 years. She had a year and a half. You know? And we had all this. And we made it for 8 years. And nobody drank. That's the main thing here, is don't drink. If you want the joy, you get into this power. You get into things that come up and you write about them. You know, do a little 10-step every day. They're not playing with that. This woman would put me up against the wall if I laugh about meditation. She just grabbed me and you listen. And you better hear what I got to say. You know, I mean, I'll give you a for instance. I'll walk in one time. Kids are there. I come in from a trip because my work has gotten better. And I said, all I said about her was this. This is what I learned about darting. I said, I'm sober. I said, hey, would y'all like to go to the ice rink today to see the ice show? They all were watching TV and they turned out, we'd love to go. And then I said, because you're dealing with, you're dealing with two personalities, the drunk one and the sober one. The drunk never paid my tab. The sober one always paid my tab. So then I'm finding out about other people. So I say to her, or would you rather watch TV? Now, I've done this somehow on occasion before. And we're both sober. She gets up out of her chair. And I've seen this look in her eye. She grabs me again, takes me into the corridor. She says, if you ever mess with our minds again on a decision that we want to go, and then you play the dart and game, with another word in there, you know what? I'm going to let you have it. Quit doing that. It messes with our minds. Yes, we want to go to the ice show. I learned from so much from that woman. I tell you what, she was the greatest spiritual happening in my life. I never had a bad relationship because I learned from every way I could put in my wife, my life. You know, I tell you, it's just, if you stay open to that, you know, you'll have such a beautiful life. And I get angry, and my people change. You know, the drunk one and the sober one, they have other people. They have like cousins, they sit here and we're counting heads. See, I told you. Look at here. Yeah, I told you there'd be more than 20 people. Now, how do you like them apples? Well, we thought there'd be more than 20. No, you didn't. So I'm looking at all these people. I'm going like, wow, you know, and they go like, and then they'll, like, in the meetings, you know, the first time I saw this lady, like, oh, look at over there. And I'm listening to the speaker, right? Over there, Jerry, over there. Look at over there. What are you talking about? You know, the topic sphere. Yeah. Yeah, but look at her over there. Yeah. I met a man not too long ago that he has a lot of people in his head, really, you know. I mean, he has a real disorder. He said, I helped save his life. He says, you know, they're really alive in my head, brother. I said, well, just take them all to the steps because they get too confusing, you know. Yeah, I mean, I'm a compulsive overeater. I always, you know, that one was always lurking. Well, let's just go have, if it gets tough, we're going to have three pies, you know. So, you know, but, you know. Yeah, I tell you, it's quite a life here. I look for, the black people, the Korean people, the Bow people in California, the Chinese people, everybody in San Francisco, there's every nationality there. The gay lesbian people, the transgender people, whatever, you know, what that I come across. I hated, I'll tell you that right now. I did all the jokes you ever heard, you know what, and I would take all the jokes, you know, whatever. But I just didn't like people because of my life from the past. So people were thinking, well, let's see how powerful these steps are. I can tell you today that my heart's so full of love for people that if it wasn't, I wouldn't be here. It's just that simple. You know, thanks to this loving God. You'll find out in step 7, in the 12x12. The reason why I keep mentioning the 12x12, I'm not knocking the big book ever. But there's more information. You know, well, I had to know about the pain, you know, that was going to be ahead of me with my kids. Writing inventories, and why mine didn't come back, why theirs did, why I didn't, why their... Because my people, everything that... There's a journey behind every surrender. Every time I'm into something and I can't let go of it, that's my surrender. That's positive. That's not negative. Don't drink. That's your journey. The first woman that ever left me in sobriety, whoa! I mean, when I was drunk, I could care less. Well, I cared. You know, you know, I forget how many years it wasn't Val because I left Val. You know, that was her name. And there's this other woman. I go, my God. You know, I thought I was going to die. You know, and I went to a meeting that night. It was a speaker meeting. This woman stands up and she says, you know, a few years ago, you all know my husband was a circuit speaker and it killed me. And I thought I was going to die of a broken heart. My people went, well, I am. It's all about me now, you know. And she says, instead, there's a way God used to remove him to open my heart to other people. And I'll tell you right now, when I was with certain people, my AA groups became very, sorry, I got to be gone. I got to be home at 5:30. I actually did that. You know, I can't, can you share the 8:30 meeting? I don't know, let me check. You know, this is not too long ago. You know, and so things got real rolling for me. You know, my priorities because of this person. And I'll tell you right now, I just came out of a relationship that took me, and I don't hide. I like to just talk right from the gut, brother. That's where I'm at. You know, I'm not no hot shot speaker. I had this emotional love for this woman, and still do, except the power in these steps are so powerful. Like, I know it's a journey. And always remember that it's a journey on all these surrenders to God. You hear the people that don't know, haven't had many surrenders? I'll tell you how they sound. Turn it over. That's how they sound, you know, to me. I'm only talking about me. Well, Jerry, just turn her over. when I came in, it was, yes, the idea is to turn it over. But every time I turn anything over, as money, women, cars, job, whatever, there's a journey. There's a process. And it's in step 7 on the bottom of the second page over, I think it is. It talks about this process. And it says it's unbelievably painful. So I can't even describe it. And those of you that experience it have laughed and nodded your heads. The other ones are going like, he's got 26 years. And he what? And he's still in pain? He's really sick. How did they get him to speak here? Yeah, you know. I'll tell you, you need this program more the longer you're here than as you get here. Because you're going to process more. More is going to be revealed. You know, more about my stroke. More about the little girls that have you to birthday parties and to make fun of me. My mom thought they were nice being having me over there just to have me there because I looked so ugly. They brought me over there to make fun of me. You know, all this came up. You know, lots of stuff. Anger behind my dad beating on me. Anger here, anger there. My dad dying, that son of a gun, because the next year I was going to University of Michigan. My dream. And I couldn't. I had to go to live with my sister in Georgia. Now, so the program is powerful, you know, and it's joyful. You know, these are just things I've had to go through. You know, man. Every time I've gone through something where it says, I've been stripped of money, you know, I'm blessed, you know. My friend Jennifer is here, you know. Jennifer's given me a key to her place ever since she met me. I sponsored her. All that means, I took her through the steps. That's it, folks. Don't ever get me. I'm not into this. Go call your sponsor. You know, go call anybody. By the time you get the so-called sponsor, you might be drunk. You know what? Well, I can't share at this meeting because, you know, I might say something and my sponsor may not like it. Or I love this one, the name dropping. My sponsor, and then you have an outstanding person in your group. Well, my sponsor is Mary Sue or whatever. Well, so what the hell is that shit? You know, what? I mean, Mary Sue's got it together. You know, that's where I go with all this stuff, see. But I also remember I came in 74 where they wanted you to go out with these steps and experience life. None of this relationship stuff. Go have one. But don't come back and tell us if you get drunk over one that the program didn't work. You got drunk because you wanted to get drunk. She didn't make you drink, or he didn't make you drink. You made you. Alcohol got you drunk, brother. They didn't mess around with, poor baby. Well, you know what? We told you. You shouldn't have had it until you had over a year. My God. Man, some people. Why wait a year to get drunk? And all the physical and mental abuse we've had all our life, way before we get here. You know, I have seen, I live with a woman that was my roommate that went through child abuse like you wouldn't believe. And I mean, they had her tearing up phone books, then burning them because it was being this person. And I seen this woman recover with these steps. The people that are in pain are in the steps. And the pain that you're in is taking you to that surrender journey. There's always a journey. Like I said, I have yet... Don't even come around me if I'm in pain like I was with this past lady. I was in deep pain. Deep. But I know I was in journey. Yeah. My friend here says, yeah, I bet he still got her picture in his wallet. Yeah. I do. Yeah. But like, you know, this person that I told you that offered me her house for over 12 years now is Jennifer. You know, I've always been taken care of. Maybe it's not mine. Maybe the food is there. Or maybe this isn't. But I'm taken care of. You know, she knows there's nothing I wouldn't do for her. There's nothing I wouldn't do for anybody in AA. You know, my friend right here in the front row, she says, I just met her the past 8 months. Got over 13 years in this program. I love her. And Marlene that asked me to share here today, you know. I don't have to know people to love them. She found something great. I love this one. That she liked about me and my program. That's what the program is about. When they say you're sometimes the only big book people could see, well, think about how you carry your mouth into out there in Wawa land, you know, and how you go 90 mile an hour behind around somebody with an easy does it on your car. I love that, you know. And I used to get into all this bad language out there sometimes, and my praying hands would fall out of my shirt. Like, oh, yeah, you're really a program of attraction. You better take that. take that baby off. You know. So, you know, the journey here, the steps here for every problem, good or bad. Because the good will take you out, folks, as good as the bad. I'll guarantee you, man, I've sat in Las Vegas in a new Cadillac with Miss World, you know, and steps. I might have said, you know what, now it's time to have one, you know. But the worst I've ever did out there is I'm a compulsive overeater also. I binge. Oh, can't take it, man. Everything's too good. Give me 3 chickens, man, and 2 pies, you know, which could take me out, too. Matter of fact, years ago, I had 9 years abstinence straight in OA, and I thought I had it together, so I had to have another lesson. And I went into a store. I made a big sale, and I decided my favorite sweets were Twinkies. I decided it was time to have one. Well, the story goes, my roommate that I was talking to you about walked into our place, found me on the floor with cellophane wrappers all over my face, all over my Cadillac. She traced me back. I had bought out the shelf, dropped a 50. The guy gave her my change, said, man, what happened to that guy? Well, I mean, he went like a nut over there. And it just took me into a whiteout. And I had chocolate and cream, and I almost died. She got me to the hospital. And what happened is I ate so much sugar so quick that it swelled up my stomach muscles, and I had no functions. And she got me there and got my stomach pumped in time, or I would have died. And I love this one. I wake up in this hospital bed. And people that didn't take OA serious that knew me, that were in AANA, I'm in bed, and they're all at the foot of the bed, and they're all angry. And they said, Jerry, a lot of my friends, I made friends with these convicts. Jerry, we know you're going to be okay, but we're going to tell you one thing, brother. We're serious about this OA thing with you. We could handle if you died on an OD, if you decided to try heroin or cocaine or alcohol. But to go out here to the cemetery and watch them bury you, what caused his death? He OD'd on Twinkies. We could not handle that one, brother. You know. So, you know what? Everybody got a different respect for how sugar can take you out, including me, brother. Let me tell you what, you know. I still dive into some sugar, but I tell you what, God bless you. Don't ever take me to the store and think I'm going to grab a Twinkie. I might grab everything else, but I don't recoil like that, you know. And it's a day at a time here, you know. And it's a day of sobriety and joy every day for me. And when the rough times hit, you know, like I can be, I like, not that I'm that kind of speaker, but I like people that are joyful and just kind of lay the cards out. You know, I don't have nothing up here wrote down and all that. And where I'm at today is, lovingly, I'm still at Jennifer's. Hope to be getting my own place someday, you know, but I'm not worried about it, you know. And, you know, my life is just full of joy, you know. I pulled up in my brand new 1990 Ford wagon that I just came back from Kansas City, Missouri in, and people all along the way up there and back saying, are you in that? Hey, I guess so. I'm buying gas for it, you know. Where are you going? I said, St. Louis, Missouri. Oh, okay. Yeah, I just want gas, man. You know, the power will take it there. I said, you know, the only thing that worried me about it when I got back from Kansas City last week or this week was my left rear tire. When I was going to Beaumont for a cat show, it blew out on me. And I stopped in this little town and bought a little used $20 tire, and that's what I rode on all the way up there and back. But I just know God will take care of things, you know. And if not, then you have your experience. Well, what do you think is coming? I'll tell you right now, don't worry about what's coming. Just take care of the now. Don't worry about people with time. Just worry about the time you got. You know, enjoy the time you got. You know, that's where I'm at. 26 years, right on. You know, I live for just nuts. You know, I really am in recovery, you know. Because the way you tell people in recovery, they're somewhat happy. You know, the joy of living, it's on page 132. We insist on being happy. You know, so you meet the prudes. They have a hard time with me. I'll guarantee you they do. Well, is everything funny with you? I heard a guy at the club the other day tells me, well, I guess everything's not funny all the time, huh? My people came out. And I just said, I looked at this sick dude and I said, I'm going to tell you something. Whatever gave you that idea, I don't know. But if you're not happy and you're in this program, I learned from the day I came in out of this alley that if you're not happy, you're not working this program. You're working yours. Like, poor me, I'll never, you know. Hey. Do I want to make the holiday sad? Yeah, I could do that, you know. Got asked to leave the Air Force in October. All my real bad things happened out there in the holidays. Buried my mother on Christmas Day. On the 26th, I come home, my kids are gone. My sobriety birthday is January 28th. My dad died in my arms drinking in January on the 28th. If I wanted to make a case, oh, brother. You know, in the meeting I went to, you weren't allowed to talk for a year. Because they wanted you to learn recovery, not be a whiner. You know, some of us get here, maybe we're not winos until we get sober. Then we whine about everything. We just whine. That would have been me, you know. I mean, well, look at what they got, and I only got this, you know, and all that. So what I was able to do is get recovery for a year and know how to use a fourth step. And know the difference. Well, the tenth is the same as the fourth. Yeah, that's why it's six steps away from it. Yeah, listen to people. You don't think we're not sick? Listen to what we talk about. What devastates us, you know, if you don't think you have a mental illness, you know. If you know people that come here, you see them out there, and they're not coming to AA, but they're sober. I heard this from Clancy. They don't have the disease. They just had a drinking problem. And I've met a lot of them, honest to God. They stop drinking, their life gets better. I stopped drinking, if anything, my life got better, but also got worse. You know, like, what now? Everybody's getting jobs. I'm not. What about my kids? I'm not. This. I had everything negative. Everything. From whatever. And I made it all positive. You know? And this program is positive. Yeah, well, you just haven't been through what I've been through. Yeah, well, God, we'll get through it. You know, my God. Let go. You know, I go to a little church, and it's really neat. And this woman has a great message. Her name is Karen. And she says, she gave a talk. And she says, first, on anything we do, we got to stop. And she says, and people in Alcoholics Anonymous have to stop first. And then they have a recovery program. That's right. You know, and then you get to, then you know what I love about us? We get all the people that want to get stuff going. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'll never be recovered. I'm in recovery. You know, we get all this, you know. So to just be whatever you want to be. You know, it says the word recovered is about the first 100. We have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body of this spiritual illness that we have. The spiritual malady has to overcome first. It's on page 66, I believe. I'm a page dropper, but it helps. I don't want you to think this stuff's coming from me, that this is my idea, you know. So you know what? And when you get to the power, that's a daily reprieve on a terminal illness, you know. But recovered from, yeah, I don't do things that I normally do, and when I do, I catch myself. My defects are kind of funny. You know, a guy told me that he knew me when I first arrived in AA, and he said, yeah, you know what you were? You were one defect looking for a character. I didn't know how to take that, but, you know, because we sit here, and we're moody. I'm moody. You know, I'll sit there, and if you said something to hurt one of my people, may not even tell you. We just ice you. I don't know you're in the room. You're right here. Hey, Jerry, how you doing? Did I do something to you? Just, you know, go eat your potato chips, you know. So whatever, you know, that's it. And, you know, the life here, you know, just enjoy your life. Enjoy your, if you have the defects. There's a lady here, I won't mention your name, but I knew her. I've known her for over 13 months, and she, where I live with my wife, that when we tried to get back together, she knew my wife. She knew how pretty she was, and she's three rows back, right there. And I walked in this room, and she said, "Jerry, I never knew you were in this program, you know." But she'll tell you that she never saw me many days without a smile on my face. Probably the worst day I ever had there was when I really realized that maybe this woman wasn't coming back. And I tell you what, I pain, God, you know, thanks to Chuck C, love the pain. Love it. If you're in pain today, love it. Don't get angry with it because it'll create more people. And they will come at you. They want you to be angry, because the more angry you are, the more it separates you from God. You know, I'd rather be happy than right. You know, hear all these little things. You know, I love life today. You know, I saw Prince that I was telling you last night on the theater. Hopefully things work right. I'll go see him at the University of Houston next week on the 30th. You know, one of the things I worried about when I was in Kansas City was my friends, and will there be ink that's left to see Prince? You know, how heavy is it? You know, and like I said, I don't have an apartment today, but I live with my friend Jennifer. I don't have a new car, but I got one that's paid for. It's got me where I needed to go. I don't have a lot of money, but I'm overpaid. Norm Alfie said that many years ago before he died. When I'm in AA, I'm overpaid. You know, I mean, what a beautiful life. What beautiful people. And what you see in other people is you. You know, this beautiful friend I have up here, Kathy, she's just super. Super. What a traitor. Jennifer. I can go. I used to go around in my club, and people, when I was gone, said, God, we're glad you're back. Then there were the other ones that said, oh, God, he's back. And you need them. You know, the ones that don't like and you could care less? Yeah, they're powerful. You need them because they're garbage pullers, and they all bring stuff out of you that other people can't. See? And that's what you need that. You want that stuff out of you. You don't want to get caked up. So if God sends you a garbage puller today, then, God, not them again. That's it. That's the bun. That's the one. These are easy to love. You people are here that I know are easy to love. It's that one. That's no way I'm hanging, baby. Never. But Jerry, I want to that's this. We're like little kids, you know. You want to know how to treat us if we're upset? Treat us like a 5-year-old. Well, what can I do? Is there anything? And if the little one comes out and says, no, get away from me. No, get away. I'll let them process, man. You know what? Because sometimes people here, just because they have time and they don't get into meditation, they get sick or sober. You know, just because I got time doesn't mean I'm well. I have a good time. I'll tell you, there's a lot of people that have more time and less time than me. But nobody in AA has a better time than me. Nobody, you know. I go up dancing at this club called the Sky Bar. I have a big time up there, you know. And sometimes they bring me up on the stage and I get to do my stuff. Big, big, you know, let's do it. You know, and I know I get down. I was with my friend Kathy one night and the person three tables over held up a 10. Well, my ego just went like, oh, give me a break, you know. And like I said, you know what, I'm old in age, but not in my heart. You know, find at least 5 good friends is my suggestion before I close it. The people that you really know it's okay to call at 3 a.m. or 3 p.m. At least 5. You know. And I tell you what, because your life here is just starting. Today is another new day. The other 26 years and 10 months, that's that. You know. See, my friend Robert here, God bless. I'm sorry, Robert, I'll put you on the tape, but, you know, what a blessing you are. You are. He really is. He got a lot of garbage out of the people at my home group. Yeah. 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 Robert was putting on you, baby. Like, yeah, we don't want to hear the truth, man. We don't want to hear that. But that the truth that sets you free. Yeah. So I want to thank Marlene again and for your, you know, what a beautiful topic for your whole conference. A vision for you. And I hope your vision is, mine for you would be, if I said a prayer, and I will for all of us today, we stay sober one day at a time, enjoy life, and help somebody out there that holds out their hand to us. Thank you very much.